I'm your host, AB.
And this week on Mama Murdered a Podcast, we're covering a case of domestic violence. So this is your trigger warning. And typically, I don't even give trigger warnings just because this is a true crime podcast. This is what you came for. However, this isn't a case of what we would typically think of when we think of a quote-unquote typical domestic violence case. It's not a man-on-woman domestic violence situation, it's actually a woman-on-man domestic violence. So I'm really hoping that by sharing this episode and this case, that it'll maybe help shine a light on the fact that men can be victims of domestic violence, and that domestic violence happens in all kinds of relationships, whether it's a man and a woman or same-sex couples. It's happening everywhere. And it's just not as widely reported on as it is with a man on woman. So this week we're covering the case of Alex Skill from the UK. So with all that being said, and without further ado, let's get it. Alex Skill met Jordan Worth on June 3rd of 2012. And they met when the two of them were both just 16 years old. And they only met by happenstance. They were both attending a drama performance that their friends were both in. Jordan and Alex both had friends in a different friend group that were either in or participating in the performance. And Jordan and Alex just started talking to one another while they waited for their friends to start their roles in the drama performance. And Alex was cute, but he didn't have much experience with girls. So when Jordan showed interest in Alex, he was kind of swooned by her. She was pretty, she was smart, and thus started their very tragic, very toxic, very unhealthy and even dangerous teenage relationship. And like I said, Alex didn't really have much experience with girls or having girlfriends, so he usually just focused most of his time and energy on soccer, as we'd call it in the US, but in the UK they call it football. So he spent a lot of his time doing football slash soccer. But like a lot of teenage loves, once Alex and Jordan started dating, Alex kind of put soccer on the back burner and made Jordan his main priority. And for the first year of their relationship, things seemed fine. And I'll even give it to them, a year-long relationship as a teenager may as well be a 30-year-long marriage with the hormones that teenagers face. Most teenage relationships only last a few months before one of them calls it quits, but not Jordan and Alex. They spent the first year of their relationship together doing very typical teenage date type of things. Jordan got along with Alex's friends and family, even though Alex's mom, Geraldine, was never really Jordan's biggest fan. She even referred to Jordan as, quote-unquote, a bit tricky. Which I feel like that says it all coming from a British mom. She's a bit tricky. That was horrible. I'm really sorry. And Geraldine had a handful of reasons as to why she didn't really care for Jordan. Because gradually, over time, Jordan kind of started to dictate what Alex could and couldn't wear, who he could and couldn't talk to, what he could and couldn't do. And Jordan even made Alex get the haircut that she chose for him. And as we all know, these are a few of the really small but really bright red flags of someone's controlling behavior. And it sounds like, even early on in their relationship, that Jordan tried to dictate and control other things in Alex's life. For instance, Jordan hated the fact that Alex was so close with his family, and she really couldn't stand the fact that Alex and his family ate dinner together every night as a family. They would sit and eat dinner and kind of talk through their day. Just very normal, healthy family things that Alex was doing. Jordan hated it. Jordan also couldn't understand why Alex was so close with his grandpa. And even though Alex's mom didn't really care for Jordan much, she knew that Jordan had come from a good family and that she was planning to study fine arts in college, so Geraldine possibly chalked Jordan's controlling nature up to just her being a teenager. Because let's face it, all teenagers are assholes. But all of the excuses and the overlooking of Jordan's behavior all came to a stop for Geraldine on Jordan's 18th birthday. Because get this, Alex's family had bought tickets for their entire family, including Jordan, to go see the Lion King musical in London. Now, mind you, Alex's parents paid for everyone, including Jordan, to go see the Lion King musical in London to celebrate Jordan's 18th birthday. That's a pretty big gift from your boyfriend's parents. And Alex had only been dating Jordan for a little over a year at this point. So this was a super sweet gesture from Alex's parents to Jordan. And the musical went great. Everybody had a really good time and they really enjoyed their day. But after the musical was over and after everyone had gone back to their hotel rooms, Alex came out of the bathroom of the hotel room that he and Jordan were sharing, and Jordan was just gone. Kind of like she had just vanished into thin air. Alex called his mom. They're all out looking around the hotel trying to find Jordan. But Jordan wasn't answering the phone when Alex called. She wasn't texting back when Alex texted. And all of this was going on for over an hour. Alex and his entire family were panicking. They were calling and still getting no answer. So they're all just frantically searching for Jordan and she's just gone. And of course, Alex's family feels like shit because, like, they'd just taken Alex's girlfriend to London for a birthday trip and now they can't find her. And again, they searched for Jordan for well over an hour. And when everybody decided to go look in the hotel lobby again, there Jordan was, just standing there laughing at Alex and his entire family for being so panicked and worried about her. Jordan played this off like this was just a big prank. So making Alex and his entire family think that she was missing for over an hour was her definition of a prank. Homegirl really needs to look up what a prank is because this ain't it. And after this little prank, Alex's friends and family were at this point kind of in Alex's ear telling him that it may be time to move on from Jordan and this relationship. Because if pretending to be missing and having your boyfriend and his entire family search for you isn't a red flag, then I don't know what is. Now, in between these huge red flags were smaller red flags that Alex seemingly missed. Jordan constantly accused him of cheating or flirting with other girls, and she was extremely jealous. And this will come up again and again and again in this case, but just like we see in a lot of domestic violence cases, Alex defended Jordan to his friends and family, telling them that Jordan didn't act like this when they were alone, and he even gave them the old, "you don't know her like I do" spiel. And the excuses for Jordan and her behavior would continue on like this for a while. But when Jordan and Alex went on another trip together, this time to Egypt, which, as an American, this sounds insane to even say. Like a couple of teenagers are just going to take a trip to Egypt together? Like what? But regardless of how shocking this may sound, this is what happened. And while the two of them were in Egypt on this trip together, things were great until they weren't. Because Jordan turned up missing yet again. Except this time, Alex's family wasn't with him and he was alone in a different country and his girlfriend was missing again. And it was the same as the time before where Alex was calling and Jordan wasn't answering and she just wasn't returning text messages that he was sending, just no contact. Alex searched and looked for Jordan, but he couldn't find her. And again, more than an hour later, Alex found Jordan in the lobby of the hotel room that they were staying at, laughing about his worry and panic. Alex didn't think these pranks were funny, but Jordan had herself a good old laugh about it, which is ridiculous, and from here, things only get progressively worse and worse and worse and worse. Now, the next big red flag that happened on Alex's 18th birthday. Alex was a twin, and their parents had rented out the town hall to throw their 18th birthday bash in. But Jordan couldn't let this just be a time of celebration, as we've already seen once before on her own birthday trip to London with Alex and his family. This time, Jordan would ruin the celebration by accusing Alex of cheating or flirting with his little sister's best friend. Now, Alex's sister's best friend was only 15 years old, and Alex had known her his whole life. There wasn't anything romantic about it. He was just the older brother to his sister's best friend. Nothing more, nothing less. But a few days before Alex's 18th birthday celebration, Jordan told Alex that if his sister's best friend was coming, then she wouldn't be there. And Alex basically told her, like, I have no idea if she's planning to come or not. And for whatever reason, this 15-year-old girl was like Jordan's arch enemy or something. Jordan could not stand this poor girl, and for absolutely no reason. When Jordan showed up to the birthday bash at the town hall, and Alex's sister's best friend was there, Jordan started calling this poor girl names and just causing, like, the biggest scene. And mind you, this girl is 15 years old, and Jordan was 18 years old at the time. What 18-year-old do you know that's arguing and cussing out a 15-year-old? That is insane. So, of course, Alex tries to break things up and calm Jordan down, but Jordan absolutely refused to leave, and things got so out of hand that Alex ended up in a bathroom stall crying on the toilet on his own birthday, y'all. Jordan had caused such a scene and made things get so out of hand that it essentially ruined Alex and his twins' entire birthday bash. Now, after this big catastrophe at the birthday party, Alex's friends and family begged him to just leave Jordan. And this time, Alex agreed with him. Things were just getting to be too much on Alex, and it was time to break things off with Jordan for good. But Alex wanting to end things with Jordan was only solidified when Jordan broke the Sims card for Alex's phone during an argument. This is when Alex told Jordan that he was done. It was over. But within literal days of the breakup, Jordan showed up at Alex's parents' house where he lived. And Jordan had only shown up to let Alex know that she was pregnant. And Alex's mom, Geraldine, just wasn't going for it. She didn't believe Jordan, and she thought that this was just Jordan's way to try to get Alex back. I think Alex's mom kind of thought that Jordan was lying to get Alex back, and that she would end up saying that she miscarried or something like that. Like, maybe Jordan was just lying about being pregnant. But Jordan actually took a pregnancy test at Alex's house just to prove to everybody that she was, in fact, telling the truth. And Jordan was, in fact, pregnant. Alex told Jordan that he wanted to be there for their baby and that he wanted to be involved and help in any way that he could, but that he did not want to be in a relationship with her. And after Jordan left Alex's house that day, he didn't hear from her again for over a year, which is wild, especially considering that Alex wanted to be there for the baby. Jordan had completely refused to let Alex be a part of the pregnancy or the birth at all, and the baby was 3 months old when Jordan sent a text message to Alex's mom, Geraldine. Jordan sent this message to Geraldine asking if she wanted to meet her grandson, who she'd named TJ. And of course, Geraldine wanted to meet and be a part of baby TJ's life. And she says from the moment that she laid eyes on TJ that she was completely in love with that baby. But can we take a second and just acknowledge that Jordan showing up and letting everyone know she was pregnant and then disappearing for over a year was probably just a move for her to dominate her control and power over this situation. Kind of like Jordan wanted to make sure that she got the last laugh and the last say-so in any situation. But once Jordan started coming back around with baby TJ, everyone kind of felt like Jordan was new and improved. Alex's family thought that being a mom kind of suited Jordan and that maybe she had changed after becoming a mom. Alex's family let go of the past and hoped that things would be different now that Jordan seemed so different. And they believed this so much that they actually encouraged Alex to try to get back together with Jordan and to try to work it out for the sake of baby TJ. And honestly, Alex wasn't going for this at first. Because when Jordan first started coming back around after baby TJ was born, Alex was having it set up so that he didn't even have to see Jordan when he went to pick up and drop off baby TJ. But Alex wanted to see more of his son and he wanted to be there for him in his day-to-day life. So essentially, Alex didn't want to be a part-time dad. He wanted the whole experience. And eventually, Alex gave Jordan one more chance, and that was all she needed. Jordan and baby TJ even moved into Alex's parents' house with Alex and his family. And for the first few months, things were perfect. Until Alex and Jordan had driven past Alex's sister's best friend. The one that Jordan hated with a passion and the one that she had thrown insults at during Alex's 18th birthday party. And when they'd driven past her, the old Jordan was unlocked and she was out. And I'm assuming that someone called Alex's mom, Geraldine, and told her about the incident. Because when Alex and Jordan got back home, Geraldine sat Jordan down and tried to talk to her about her behavior and how she couldn't just lash out whenever she didn't like something. And that was all Jordan needed to hear. She lashed out even bigger this time. Jordan packed all of her things and all of baby TJ's things, and she told Alex that it was time for him to choose. Alex was given the ultimatum to either move out with her and baby TJ, and they could all live at Jordan's parents' house together, or he could stay living with his parents in their house and not see his son TJ again. And Jordan and Alex had been living together at Alex's parents' house for like 7 or 8 months at this time. So Alex had gotten pretty used to being a dad and seeing his son TJ every day. And he couldn't just never see his son again. So, of course, Alex packed up all his things and he moved in with Jordan at her parents' house. And sadly, Alex's parents wouldn't see him again for 2 years after the day that he moved out to live with Jordan at her parents' house. It was immediately after Alex moved in at Jordan's parents' house that Jordan made Alex get a new phone with a new number. That way, none of his friends or family members would be able to get in touch with him, even if they wanted to. Jordan had made sure that Alex cut ties with anyone and everyone who could possibly be a support system for him. And these are the first few steps that Jordan took to isolate Alex from anyone who might be able to save him. Jordan even went so far as to make Alex throw his PlayStation away because apparently you can chat with people on PlayStation, which was news to me. But I Googled it, and yeah, you can talk to people on a PlayStation. So, she was this dedicated to making sure that Alex didn't have any way to reach anyone besides her. Jordan blocked all of Alex's family's numbers from being able to call Alex's phone, and he wasn't allowed to speak to anyone outside of her and her parents. And after not being able to get in touch with Alex for so long, Alex's mom, Geraldine, came up with an idea to send like a dollar or so in pounds, because again, this case is out of the UK. But she'd sent Alex like a dollar or two through like Cash App or PayPal, some kind of online banking, with a note that said, "I love you" in the notes section of the transaction. But Jordan must have had control over Alex's phone because the money was sent back to Alex's mom with a reply that said, "I hate you, stay away from me." And of course, Geraldine knew that Alex would have never sent something like that to her. And remember that Jordan always hated how close Alex and his family actually were. And she'd even complain about Alex's family eating dinner together every night before she gave them the ultimatum to move out with her or never see his kid again. So if Alex didn't send that money back with a nasty message to his mom, then that really only leaves Jordan that could have done it. And I was curious, so I looked up the equivalence of £1 in US dollars, and £1 is about 80 cents. So Geraldine was literally sending Alex change to be able to communicate with him through online banking apps. Because that's how much control Jordan had over Alex at this point already. And at one point, while they were still living at Jordan's parents' house, Jordan came in and told Alex that his mom had just called her mom to let them know that Alex's grandpa had passed away. Alex and his grandpa were extremely, extremely close, and this was like devastating news. Alex hadn't been able to say goodbye. Alex hadn't seen his grandpa in a while. He was just really upset. And a few hours later, when he was still upset and crying, Jordan asked what was wrong. And Alex told her, like, "You just told me my grandpa died a few hours ago. I'm upset." Jordan just kind of looked at him and was like, "Oh no, he's not really dead." That is twisted. Very, very twisted. And Jordan and Alex would continue to live in Jordan's parents' house for about a year. And for that entire year, Alex wasn't allowed to see or speak to any of his family members or any of his friends. He was only allowed to speak to Jordan or her parents. But after about a year of living in Jordan's parents' house, Jordan finally made the decision that it was time for she and Alex to get out and move into a place of their own. So naturally, that's exactly what they did. And in July of 2016, the young couple moved into a house of their own. And the way I understood it was that while Jordan and Alex were still living at Jordan's parents' house, Jordan was slowly, methodically, and gradually stepping up her abuse on Alex. And this is exactly how domestic violence works, because normally it starts off being just abused slightly or just so often. But then over time, it gradually becomes more severe forms of abuse. So think about it like this. If someone started off a relationship and their partner immediately started being extremely abusive, you would be able to recognize that as domestic abuse instantly. But if the abuse starts out slowly by isolating you, and then slowly over time it becomes a verbal abuse, and then over the course of the next, little while, it slowly gets worse and worse and worse. And you may not even realize that the abuse is happening until it's already really bad. A lot of the times, people don't even realize that they're being abused. They don't recognize those actions as abuse. And a lot of the times, the person that's being abused might even start to think that if they could figure out a way to stop making their abuser mad in this relationship, then they would be able to get back to a good place. But it's always slowly over time, things escalate. And then it almost turns into like a sort of drug for both people. And I'll explain how that usually happens as we get further into Jordan and Alex's relationship. So Jordan and Alex have moved into their own house together, and now they're out of Jordan's parents' house. And that's when Jordan decided that it was time that she and Alex have another baby. Because at this point, Alex is probably sort of numb to the abuse that's happening, and he likely doesn't even realize that he was being abused at this point. So Alex agreed with Jordan about having another baby. And I think Alex might have even been hopeful that a new baby would take Jordan back to the person that she'd been when she'd first, started letting Alex and his family be a part of baby TJ's life. Because remember, Jordan acted so differently after giving birth to baby TJ that even Alex's own mom encouraged him to give her another chance, which we know he did, and now here we are. But I wonder if Alex wasn't thinking that by having another baby that would magically turn Jordan back into that loving person with a good attitude like she'd been after she had TJ. And it was only a couple of weeks after Jordan and Alex started trying for another baby that Jordan was pregnant again. But soon after finding out that she was pregnant, Jordan was back on her obsession that Alex had cheated on her during their year-long breakup. So this was news to me because I wasn't aware that you could cheat on someone that you were broken up with. But those of us who have watched Friends 100 times knows that that is in fact possible. But not in Alex and Jordan's situation though, because Alex had broken up with Jordan and they weren't together at all until she showed up a year later with a 3-month-old baby TJ. But this is something that Jordan would always accuse Alex of. She was constantly berating him about cheating or talking to other girls, and she was even doing this later on in their relationship when she was making Alex stay right by her side literally all day long from daylight to dark. But I'm jumping ahead of myself. So within a few weeks of being pregnant, Jordan made Alex a new Facebook account, and the only reason that Jordan even made this Facebook account was so that she could pretend to be Alex and so she could message all of his old female friends and tell them how ugly they were or ask if they were still fat. And she was also using this Facebook account to reach out to Alex's family members, and again, she's doing all of this pretending to be Alex. So she would reach out to members of Alex's family, and especially the family members that he was really close with, and she would do this pretending to be Alex just to send them messages about how much he hated them and how he never wanted to see them again. And this was just another way to isolate Alex. Jordan probably hoped that by messaging all of these people that Alex would feel like he couldn't reach out to them for help if he ever needed to. And it was only a few weeks after this Facebook page was made in Alex's name that Jordan convinced Alex he needed to quit his job. She told him that he could find a better job with better pay and so on and so forth. But that was never actually in the plans for Jordan. She never wanted Alex to actually find a better job. She just needed a way to convince him to quit the job that he already had. But not only did Jordan not want Alex to find another job, but she also took all of his debit cards and bank cards after she talked him into quitting his job. And I was kind of going through this case with my husband, and he made a reference that I hadn't thought of, and one that I think will help a lot of people who have never experienced domestic violence understand how Jordan was able to do so many things to Alex, and him seemingly not even notice. Because Jordan's abuse only gets worse from here and a lot more physical. So let me break it down for you like my husband broke it down for me. He said, this situation is a lot like boiling a lobster. You put the lobster in the pot and it's still alive. So the water is warming up gradually. The lobster doesn't realize that the temperature is too hot until it's too late. So in this case, Alex would be the lobster. And Jordan is boiling him low and slow, and he doesn't realize the danger of the temperature of the water, aka Jordan's abuse, until it's at a deadly level. So hopefully that will kind of help you understand how Alex was just seemingly okay with all these changes, because he didn't realize that the water was about to boil. But let's keep going. Because after Jordan talked Alex into quitting his job, and after she'd already taken all of his debit and credit cards, and this is financial isolation. This is a key factor in a lot of domestic violence situations. It's really hard to leave somebody with no money, no car, and nowhere to go. So after the job and taking his bank cards, Jordan was actually studying fine arts in college or university, as they like to say in the UK. So Jordan is taking classes all day long and Alex doesn't have a job. You would think that Alex probably stayed home with baby TJ all day while Jordan went to class. But you would be wrong. Because that's not what Alex did all day long. Jordan would take baby TJ and drop him off with her parents while she went to class. And then Jordan would make Alex go to the college campus with her, and she would either lock Alex in the car all day long in the parking lot while she was in class, or she would make him go into class with her and just sit next to her, which is, both of those are crazy. So at this point, she has Alex right by her side, literally every waking moment of the day. But according to Alex, Jordan made him stay in the car or go to class with her every day because she said that she couldn't trust him. I don't see how you can say you don't trust someone when they are with you literally every single day, all day long. But this was her argument. And this is where things kind of start to escalate with the physical abuse, because in the winter months of 2016, Alex and Jordan went to Hyde Park Winter Wonderland in London, and I looked this up, and it seems like an amusement park of some sort. The description says, experience London's magical winter destination. Enjoy ice skating, rides, games, food, entertainment, and more. So something like a winter-themed amusement park is where they went. And while they were there, Jordan again started accusing Alex of cheating. And it didn't really matter how many times Alex told Jordan that he'd never cheated on her, she kept on with the allegations. And it eventually boiled over to a point where Jordan gave Alex two options. Those two options were that they could either leave from the Winter Wonderland and it would ruin everybody's whole day, or Alex could go into a nearby store and buy a pack of sleeping pills. So, of course, Alex didn't want to ruin everybody's day, so he just went into the store and bought the sleeping pills. Once Alex had the sleeping pills, Jordan told him to take one, which Alex did. But then Jordan told Alex to go ahead and take the rest of the sleeping pills in the pack, but not just to take them. She wanted him to put all of the pills in his mouth, chew them up, and then swallow them. And again, Alex did as he was told. Alex spent that entire day walking around the amusement park in a zombie-like state, and he doesn't even remember the trip after he'd taken the sleeping pills, and he has no idea how they made it back home. And this has to show what kind of abuse Alex has suffered up until this point, because he'd already gotten to the point where he just did whatever Jordan said to do. And it'll become more clear as to why Alex did whatever Jordan said here shortly. Now, Jordan and Alex had gone to this amusement park in the winter months of 2016. So towards the end of the year and the beginning of 2017, things got progressively worse as far as the physical abuse goes. Alex was sitting in the car while Jordan went to her classes at college, and he was still being accused of cheating on Jordan every single chance that she got. But in the beginning of 2017, when Jordan really started in with the physical abuse, she escalated so fast that it's almost unreal. Jordan started keeping a hairbrush in her car, and she would use this hairbrush to smack Alex in the face with it. This happened a lot of the times during their trips back and forth to the college classes that Jordan was taking, and once she hit Alex in the face so hard with the hairbrush that it actually knocked out one of his teeth. And she would have had to have been doing this while one of them was driving. But things only get worse from here, because Jordan eventually started using anything sharp that she could find, and she would stab and slash at Alex's arms, legs, wrist, and face. She would use things like a bread knife, a screwdriver, a hairbrush, a broken or jagged piece of metal or plastic. She also started making Alex sleep on the floor instead of in the bed. But once Alex would finally get to sleep, Jordan would oftentimes wake Alex up by bashing him over the head with random objects that she found laying around the house. So Alex would be laying there asleep on the floor, and then just randomly he would be woken up by Jordan beating him in the head with anything that she could find. And she would always go for blood. And then after she was sure to make him bleed, she would take a hammer to his leg so that it was harder for him to get away from her. She was literally beating the shit out of his shins with a hammer. Like a hammer and nails hammer. Jordan also started dictating when, what, and how much Alex could and couldn't eat. His food intake was eventually whittled down to almost nothing. Alex was in survival mode at this point, and it was a super low point in his life, and I'm sure people are wondering why he didn't just leave. And this kind of goes back to the lobster reference. You don't really realize the situation is dangerous until you've already been in it for too long. But Alex did finally reach a breaking point on February 3rd, 2017, and he called his dad at about 2:30 in the afternoon. This was Alex's first attempt to reach out for help from as far as what I could find. And during this call, Alex begged his dad to help him. So of course, Alex's parents didn't need any explanation. They headed straight over to Jordan and Alex's place. But once Alex's parents made it to Jordan and Alex's house, no one would come to the door when they knocked. And without knowing what else to do, Alex's parents called the police to come out and do a welfare check on Alex. When the police arrived, Jordan let the officers ride inside, and after a few minutes, the officers came back out to inform Alex's parents that Jordan and Alex had just had an argument and that things were fine now. When Alex's parents asked the officer if they could see Alex, the officer told him that Alex had made it clear that he didn't want to see his parents. So, this officer couldn't force Alex to come outside and see his parents, and as we all know, Alex only didn't want to see his parents because it would have made things worse for him once he was alone with Jordan again. So, Alex played the submissive boyfriend role just like Jordan wanted him to. The officers were able to tell Alex's parents that they had seen Alex walking with a limp, and they also informed his parents that Jordan was pregnant again. Because Alex's parents didn't even know about the second pregnancy. They hadn't seen or spoken to Alex at all since Jordan had given him the ultimatum to move out with her or never see the baby again. So Alex's parents had no idea about what all Alex had been going through. They had no idea the hell he was living day to day. And it was shortly after this call to his dad that Jordan took Alex to his favorite band to see them in concert. And this is a tactic that a lot of abusers use. This is a way for the abuser to not only be in control of the good things that happen, but also the bad things that happen. And this also gives the victim just a sliver of hope that maybe things are going to get better. This is one way that the abuser is able to keep control of every situation. You never know if you're going to wake up to hammers being bashed against your legs while you're asleep, or if you're going to wake up to concert tickets and a day out on the town with no abuse. It almost becomes like a drug for both parties, though. The abuser earns for the control, and the victim holds out hope for the next good day. That's really the only way the abuse is successful. It's a vicious cycle of abuse, and in this case, Jordan giveth and Jordan taketh away. So when she would do even the smallest things for Alex, it would give Alex this glimmer of hope that maybe things were going to get better from here on out. And then that gave Jordan the perfect opportunity to escalate the abuse. Just like the concert, for instance, Jordan surprised Alex with tickets to see his favorite band in his favorite city. And the next morning after the concert, Alex woke up on the floor of their hotel room to Jordan, who was pregnant as hell at this point, pouring boiling water onto his back. Alex had been sleeping, and this is how Jordan woke him up the morning after the concert. And then Jordan instructed Alex to tell anybody who asked about the burns on his back that the shower in the hotel room had been what burned him. So the only other people that I can really find that Alex saw was Jordan's parents. So this had to have been a situation where she said, "If my parents ask, you say it was the hotel shower." So Alex was supposed to tell anybody that the shower in the hotel was spraying out boiling hot water? That don't even make no damn sense. But Alex was pretty used to doing whatever Jordan said, and this was no different. These burns on Alex's back from the boiling water were never treated. And after this, boiling water would be one of Jordan's favorite ways to abuse Alex. But not long after this concert and having boiling hot water dumped on his back while he slept, Jordan had bought a cheap lie detector test from like a dollar store in the game section, and she made Alex sit down so that she could use this essentially toy lie detector test to question him to detect whether or not he was being truthful. And if you're wondering what kind of questions Jordan was asking Alex, they were all questions about how many times Alex had cheated on Jordan and how many other people he had slept with, which is the craziest thing because Alex was literally with Jordan every second of every day. Like, how and when would he have possibly been able to cheat on her? Hell, he's locked inside of the car all day long while she's doing her college classes, and he doesn't have a phone or a wallet or even a debit card anymore because she's taken all those things from him a long time ago. So Jordan is asking Alex these questions about cheating and sleeping around on her, and every time the lie detector would go off indicating that Alex was lying, Jordan would again pour boiling hot water from a tea kettle onto his arms. And again, this is a lie detector test that you would find in the toy section of like a discount store or a dollar store. Even real lie detectors aren't accurate enough to be admissible in court. So why the hell would this toy lie detector be accurate? And this lie detector session went on until Alex was just covered in blistered burns from boiling hot water. And then Jordan told Alex he could go run a cool bath to try to take the burn away. But then as soon as Alex got into the bath, Jordan told him to get out or she would burn him again. And as we all guessed, Alex did exactly what Jordan said. He got out of the tub and he just had to deal with the multiple burns all over his body. And let's not forget the fact that Jordan is doing all of these things like beating Alex's legs with a hammer and stabbing and cutting him with knives and screwdrivers and bashing his literal teeth in with hairbrushes. All of that's being done with baby TJ in the same house as Alex and Jordan. And now Jordan's pregnant again. So this is where we are. Now, after almost a year of being in their own house together, Jordan gave birth to the couple's second child on May 2nd, 2017. And remember, Alex had spent this entire pregnancy hoping that after Jordan gave birth, that she would go back to the loving girlfriend that she had been after she'd given birth to their oldest son, TJ. So he was just clinging on to the hope that he'd get the old Jordan back once the baby was born. And to his surprise, Jordan did go back to her old ways of being kind and generous and a loving mom and girlfriend. But that only lasted a matter of days, because it was only 3 days after she'd given birth to the couple's newest addition that Jordan was right back to dumping boiling hot water on Alex on a daily basis. And you have to remember that this is not only Jordan abusing Alex physically and mentally, she's also starving Alex. Alex wasn't eating anything on most days unless Jordan allowed him, which she never did. But finally, about 3 or 4 weeks after Jordan gave birth, a neighbor overheard Alex screaming in pain, and this neighbor called 999 to report to the police what they'd been hearing. And Police Constable Ed Finn was the responding officer that night. And we love Officer Ed Finn, just trust me. By the end of this, you'll know why we love him as much as we do. So Ed Finn responds to the 999 call from the neighbor at 2 a.m. and when he walks into the house, Alex is sitting on top of the stairs, bleeding profusely. Alex had been trying to wrap his wrist up because Jordan had slashed Alex's wrist wide open. And this cut on Alex's wrist wasn't like the cut on the wrist that you would think of when you think of somebody trying to commit suicide. But instead, Alex had a massive gash starting right next to his pinky finger and then going down his hand past his wrist. This cut was massive. And Officer Ed Finn would later go on to describe this scene as the worst domestic scene he'd ever seen. Because also keep in mind that Ed Finn is walking into this scene with Alex gushing blood from a cut to his wrist. But there's also blood strewn about the house, and Alex is covered in burns that are all in various stages of healing, with bruises from being beaten with hammers, stabbed with knives and screwdrivers, all covering his emaciated body. But when Officer Ed Finn started asking Jordan and Alex what happened, both Jordan and Alex claimed that Alex had done all of these things to himself. Jordan even tried to drive this point home even further by claiming that Alex had been suffering with depression and that he'd struggled with a battle of self-harm. And even though Alex was standing right beside Jordan, agreeing with everything she said, Officer Ed Finn wasn't buying this crock of shit, because he also knew that Alex needed stitches and a doctor as soon as possible. But there really wasn't much more that Officer Ed Finn could do if Alex wasn't willing to tell him the truth about who had done all these things to him. And Alex wasn't ready to tell anyone the truth yet. So Ed Finn took Alex and Jordan to the hospital and dropped them off. Now, once Alex got to the hospital, he was treated for an array of different things. He was given stitches on the huge gash on his wrist, and the various other cuts, slashes, and stabs were also stitched up. And to prevent infection, doctors had to scrape the dead skin off of all the burns across Alex's body. And once the doctors let Alex and Jordan know that Alex would need surgery, Jordan told Alex that they were leaving. But when a doctor tells you that you need something like surgery and you refuse, you have to have someone come in and explain to you the dangers of not following the doctor's recommendations. And usually you have to sign a paper that says that you're knowingly and willingly refusing treatment, and that you understand the risk associated with refusing care. So a consultant was brought in to explain all of these things to Jordan and Alex. And the doctors and nurses were so worried about Alex leaving with Jordan that the hospital had the consultant pull Alex to the side and talk to him in private. Alex was questioned about whether or not he was safe at home, and Alex was so deep into this cycle of abuse that he told the consultant that he was safe and that he'd inflicted all of these injuries on himself. Even after doctors and nurses explaining to Alex that if the cut on his wrist would have been a centimeter longer either way, that it would have hit an artery and he could have bled to death. But Alex still insisted that he'd done all of these things to himself. And the hospital can't force a grown man not to leave. So with that, Alex and Jordan left and headed back home. But my question is, like, isn't there a floor in every hospital where people who are a threat to themselves or to other people are held, even against their will? Like, with Alex telling the doctors and nurses that he'd done all of these various injuries to himself, why wasn't he put on, like, a 72-hour psychiatric hold? Why was he allowed to leave? I don't know, maybe someone in the UK healthcare system can explain this to me. If so, please reach out, because I am genuinely curious as to why Alex was allowed to leave the hospital. So it was the very next day after Alex was taken to the hospital by Officer Ed Finn that the officer went back to Jordan and Alex's house to check in on Alex. Ed Finn hadn't really been able to get Alex off of his mind since the night before, and he just wanted to check in on him to see if he could get Alex to tell him the truth about his injuries. But when Ed Finn got to Jordan and Alex's house, nobody came to the door, and he hadn't gotten any of Jordan or Alex's contact information, so there was really no way for him to get in touch with Alex. So Ed Finn didn't really have any other choice but to leave. But luckily, this wouldn't be the last time that Officer Ed Finn would see Alex. Because less than a week after this, a neighbor of Alex and Jordan's had called 999 again to report that they had heard Alex screaming in pain. And Officer Ed Finn was the one that responded to this call too. So once Officer Ed Finn made it to Jordan and Alex's house, Alex answered the door. And I'm sure that Ed Finn was shocked to see that Alex looked even worse this time than he had just the week before. Ed Finn tried to talk to Alex, and he tried to get Alex to tell him the truth. But every time Ed Finn was able to pull Alex out of earshot of Jordan, she would find a reason to walk into the room where Alex and Ed Finn were. This was her silent signal to Alex to keep his mouth shut. Ed Finn even told Alex he didn't believe him because he couldn't look Ed Finn in the eyes and because Alex was staring at the floor at every question Ed asked. But it didn't seem to matter what Ed Finn said or did, no matter how much he begged and pleaded Alex to tell him the truth. Alex was still insisting that he'd done all of these things to himself. But Ed Finn wasn't giving up so easily this time. Ed Finn made the excuse, telling Jordan that he needed to take Alex back to the hospital so that he could get his old wound dressings changed. And surprisingly, that worked. Ed Finn put Alex in the back of his patrol car, but Jordan didn't go with Alex to the hospital this time. So it was only Officer Ed Finn and Alex in this patrol car. And the entire way to the hospital, Ed Finn is just trying to get Alex to admit that Jordan was behind all of his multiple wounds, cuts, and burns. But Alex was insistent that he had done all of these things to himself. And after going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, Ed Finn finally decided to try one more thing. Ed Finn switched off his body cam device and he told Alex that no one else was around and that he was safe and he could finally tell him the truth. Once the body cam was turned off, Alex finally told Ed Finn that Jordan was the one behind every cut, every burn, every stab wound, and every missing tooth. And keep in mind at this time that Alex is only 22 and Jordan's just 21, so they're really, really young. But within literal minutes of Alex's confession, he asked Ed Finn to make sure to say that it was the neighbors that reported Jordan as being the abuser. He was still scared of Jordan, rightfully so. But within minutes of Alex's confession, Ed Finn had officers back at Jordan and Alex's house to place Jordan under arrest for suspicion of grievous bodily harm, which is a legal term for causing serious physical injury that are intentional and or reckless. And after Jordan's arrest, her parents were called to come and pick up baby TJ and the newest baby until the police could get everything sorted out. Alex was taken to the police station to give a full statement. And after giving his statement to police, the station rented Alex a hotel room for the night and they ordered him McDonald's for dinner. This was the first full meal that Alex had had in months and months and months, and they chose McDonald's. Come on, y'all. Y'all could have done better than that. Anyways, let's keep it going. So back at the police station, Jordan calmly explained that she had only ever slashed and cut Alex, but that she'd never stabbed him, and that she had also poured boiling hot water over his skin daily. And the way that she explains all of this is almost like she's talking to these officers about choosing a different hair color or some shit. Like at one point, she even tells the officer that she wanted to get everything figured out so that she and Alex could go back home. I'm sorry, ma'am. Somebody take her straight to jail. Because what is she even talking about? It's like she doesn't even realize how severe all the things that she's just admitted to are. Alex was finally free to call his parents and let them know where he was. And when they showed up to take Alex back home with them, they all said that they didn't even recognize him at first. His aunt even later said that Alex smelled like literal death, which actually makes perfect sense. Because the hospital staff that treated Alex, they told Officer Finn that when he brought Alex into the hospital, that Alex was about 10 days from death. So I've said it once and I'll say it again. We love Ed Finn. He figured out a way to make Alex feel safe enough to finally expose his abuser by turning off his body cam and being able to get Alex alone. And if it weren't for Ed Finn, Alex most likely wouldn't be here today. Once Alex got back home to his parents' house, it only took him 5 days to get custody of he and Jordan's kids. And he spent the next couple of months recovering from his various injuries. And then on September 28th, Jordan was officially charged with 17 different charges. But she only pled guilty to 3 of the 17 charges. And after her trial, she was sentenced to 2 concurrent 7-year sentences. And she was the first woman in the UK to be charged and convicted of controlling or coercive behavior, which tacked on another 6 months to her sentence. And it was really no surprise that during her trial, Jordan didn't show the slightest bit of remorse. She really is just heartless. And the UK justice system must be just as screwed up as ours because in January of 2022, Jordan was released from jail after only serving a fraction of her sentence. Alex has moved on and he's made it a point to share his story and shed awareness on the fact that men can be domestic violence victims too. Alex has custody of the couple's two kids and he's doing much better now. Jordan is said to be dating a new man, a bricklayer, and his friends and family have allegedly sent him the links to the BBC documentary that Alex did, warning Jordan's new boyfriend that she's dangerous. And when Alex was asked why he stayed with Jordan, the answer was simple. He said that he loved Jordan, and that he always worried that if he left Jordan, that she might take her rage out on the kids instead, so he stayed. And I could be mistaken, but I'm almost positive that it normally takes someone attempting to leave a domestic violence situation at least 7 times before they're actually successful. So thank God for Ed Finn and his body cam strategy. And that's all I have for you for this week. Let's do it again. Same time, same place, next Wednesday. See you then.
That's how my mama
murdered a podcast.